everyone, and welcome to Agents Unfiltered,
where we talk about the do's, the don'ts, and the what the fucks of real estate.
I'm Allie.
This is Danielle.
And I'm Cassie Day. Join the three of us every week as we deep dive into some wild real estate cases and give our take.
We are not attorneys and want to make it clear that this podcast or any linked materials should not be construed as legal advice.
Nor is this information a substitute for professional expertise.
We are not lawyers, financial advisors, doctors, or mortgage lenders, but we are your new BFFs.
Hey guys,
we're back.
2 weeks in a row. It's a record.
Oh my gosh. It's a miracle.
So good to see your faces. Okay. I'm super excited about this case. If you're in real estate, you would have heard about it. There's a lot of buzz around what it means for the industry. And so the name of it, I don't know if you'll know it by its name, is Sitzer et al., which means there are more people, which there are a lot more people, versus the National Association of Realtors, Keller Williams and Home Services. And it was ruled in favor of the plaintiffs for $1.78 billion in damages to sellers of more than 260,000 homes in Missouri. So
it's a massive case. I feel like everyone heard about this when it happened. And I also feel like I'm excited because as much as like we've heard the talk around it and there was like all this, oh my gosh, like what's going to happen to the real estate industry after this case? I also feel like as much as I've read about it, I still don't feel like I know much about it. Like I'm really excited.
Yeah. And researching is one of my favorite things. I love getting into the nitty gritty and just researching to research. And there was so much in this that I didn't know. So I'm going to kind of walk us through the background and then the arguments between the two of what they tried to argue and how we got here.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about what our opinions on it all and what it means for realtors. So the plaintiffs, which are the ones who were suing, allege that the defendant, the NAR, created and implemented anti-competitive rules which require home sellers to pay commissions to the broker representing the home buyer. They also allege that the other defendants enforce those rules through anti-competitive practices. Plaintiffs allege that certain rules in both the NAR handbook and code of ethics require a seller to make a blanket unilateral offer of compensation to any broker representing potential buyers as a condition of listing their home on the MLS. So we won't list your home on the MLS unless you pay the buyer's broker this commission.
Which is interesting in and of itself. So I'm excited to hear the rest.
Yes. So here's the verbiage that they are talking about in their entire argument from the MLS code of ethics. In filing property with the multiple listing service, participants make blanket unilateral offers of compensation to the other MLS participants and shall therefore specify on each listing filed with the service the compensation being offered by the listing broker to the other MLS participants. Multiple listing services shall not publish listings that do not include an offer of compensation expressed as a percentage of the gross selling price or as a definite dollar amount, nor shall they include general invitations by listing brokers to other participants to discuss terms and conditions of possible cooperative relationships. So that is the verbiage that they are speaking of
from listing agreements.
From the National Association of Realtors Code of Ethics. Okay. So that is what they have pulled and what they base all of their arguments upon.
Okay. I already have thoughts about this.
Okay. So do I. So many thoughts. Yeah. But we'll keep going.
Yes. Okay.
So here are a lot what the plaintiff's arguments are throughout. They believe that this requires the seller to offer compensation to the buyer, and it impedes the consumer's ability to negotiate the offer of buyer broker's compensation. So it takes out the ability for buyers to have to fight kind of for their own commission. They also claim that the NAR Code of Ethics encourages buyer brokers to represent to their clients that their services were free and allege that the buyer broker commission is hidden from public view.
They disagree, but okay.
Yes.
Right. What?
Yes. They say that the code of ethics encourages buyer brokers to tell buyers that they don't have to pay any commission.
That's what we do. We say majority of the time, you're probably not going to have to, but there's going to be times that are like an exception to the rule.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that was a loose term there. But
yeah.
The buyer broker commission is hidden from public view. Plaintiff alleged that the corporation defendants conspired with the NAR to enforce those rules. So that those companies conspired with the NAR to enforce those rules.
And basically all they're saying there is that because the NAR also agrees, you know, like that's their way of doing business. That's what creates a conspiracy.
Yes.
Yeah.
They allege that the corporate defendants provide sales scripts to their brokers and agents with canned responses to prevent sellers from deviating from the standard offer of buyer broker compensation. They allege that the defendants have engaged in illegal conspiracy, unfair practice, and harm to consumers. They've alleged that that these rules have virtually eliminated the ability for consumers to negotiate on commissions, as they remove all incentive for the buyers to negotiate the amount of their agent's fee and punish sellers for attempting to offer a fee that is lower than the going rate.
I would love to know how they attempt to punish the sellers. Yeah. I'm very confused.
I know.
Okay, sorry.
So many things. Plaintiffs believe that without these rules, buyers wouldn't use brokers would pay a lesser rate. Thus, broker rates would be free to buyers or would be significantly decreased because buyers would be incentivized to negotiate their fee. In the documentation, one of the real estate companies admits that it requires its affiliates to follow the NAR Code of Ethics, which plaintiffs allege are integral in enforcing the conspiracy. So by saying that they follow the NAR Code of Ethics,
okay,
they're fully in on the conspiracy. So many things, you guys. The plaintiffs hired a doctor to research for them and look at other countries in the world to see how they did their commission.
Wait, a doctor?
Yeah, like a doctor.
Has a doctor.
Here we go. A medical doctor. Listen, if you have a doctorate, you are a doctor.
I get that.
But his name is Dr. Shulman.
Okay.
And he redid a whole research study on real estate and looked at other countries and said in other countries, sellers would not pay for the buyer's agent and buyer brokers were used very infrequently. Seller commission costs were lower because of this. Australia was the one that he used as the benchmark for this argument.
Can I just do a little tangent really quick? Because my brother was looking at purchasing in Portugal. Yes, they don't have buyer's agents there per se, but they have attorneys that the buyer pays for.
Yes.
Who represents them.
Yes. So they still have representation.
Yes.
The defendant, the NAR, hired Dr. Stiro to kind of, you know, argue. And he argued that Australia was not an appropriate landmark country to compare the U.S. to. His research showed that the Germany market is much more like the American market. And in their market, sellers do still pay for at least some of the buyer's broker compensation. So his argument was that their real estate market looks a lot more like ours than Australia does. And they use a very similar system to us for commission. He also argued that the Northwest MLS proves that changing the verbiage in the SAR rule would not impact or change how things are done regarding commission. They removed the requirement for blanket unilateral offer of compensation as a condition of listing a home in 2019. And commission rates did not change and sellers still generally cover buyer's commission.
Good job, Northwest MLS. They're not getting sued.
No. So he argued that even if you change the way that it's worded, it's still going to continue to go the way that it's going. Dr. Shulman tried to argue that homes with lower commission rates sat longer than those with higher ones, but research shows that the days on market doesn't vary much based on the commission rate, and the yearly average is about 2.974 to 2.985 regardless for buyer's broker commission. Dr. Shulman argued that the verbiage by the MLS causes steering, in which buyer broker steers clients away from the home sellers who offer less than standard rates. And the defendant argued that the plaintiffs and class members were not harmed because they were aware that they had to offer buyer broker compensation, but went through the transaction anyway and signed all of the documents. Plaintiffs had the ability to negotiate or choose another agent if they want. So closing statements, highlights from the closing statements. It is so interesting because there's closing statements from the NAR and then the two other defendants, and they're very to the point, very factual. The closing statement from the plaintiff's attorney is very emotional, and there's a lot of yelling and crying.
Really?
Like tearing up. But they still won. I don't understand how this happened. Okay. So highlights. So curious, counsel from the NR and NAR, this is just some of the little tidbits from it, said it's not illegal for trade organizations to make rules, and there is no evidence that the NAR enforced the rules in Missouri. The plaintiff's lawyer has utterly failed to prove that a conspiracy to follow and enforce the rule even exists. He also noted that the plaintiff's attorney kept changing the numbers in their argument when accusing the plaintiffs of fixing commission rates, varying from 6%, 5%, 3%, 2.5%. There was enough variance to show that there isn't a fixed rate. He also pointed out that during the 7-year period relevant to the lawsuit, sellers would offer commission other than 3% in the four MLSs roughly 110,000 times. So they deviated from the standard in that time frame 110,000 times.
So how can you call that a standard? I don't think you can.
No.
Okay.
No, the defense attorney for Home Services America stated that they had not provided a single piece of evidence of conspiracy, not a single document. Dr. Wu McGill stated that no conspiracy could be found in the data and that the verbiage did not restrict any choices on seller and buyers and allows them to make their own decisions. The sellers in question got exactly what they agreed to within the terms of the agreements that they signed. The defense attorney for Keller Williams spoke on how agents are able to advocate for their own commissions, and that's set by agents and their brokerages. The plaintiff's attorney was very impassioned. He got choked up and emotional, tearing up. I would never do that. Do not stand here and attack my integrity in front of these people like that. You know why that happens? It's because they know the answers to these questions. He got very, very upset and stated that his clients were forced to pay the buyer's agent's commission to have their homes listed in the MLS.
Was this a jury trial? No, this was just in
front of a jury trial.
Oh, it was a jury.
It was a jury trial. Yes.
Is that why the emotions won and not the facts?
Yeah, I think so.
Because here's the thing. It sounds like they bought that house, right?
Yeah.
Which means they, at one point, had the sellers pay their commission, most likely. But it's only an issue because now they have to do it and they just don't want to.
I would love to know what pissed these sellers off so much, like something their agent did or didn't do.
Well, what's interesting,
pissed them off so much that they're like, we're gonna go and we're gonna like, it's just a very interesting dynamic.
What's interesting is the sellers that were questioned all said that they were pleased with the work that their agents did for them. It wasn't the lack of the agent's work or against the agents in question.
Their agents were steering them. So if their agents were
only great, because of the conspiracy put on by the National Association of Realtors and these companies.
Wild.
Wild. So thoughts and opinions. I have all of mine, but.
Okay, here's my biggest thought and opinion on this. I don't know. It's probably going to be long, but I think a lot of this boils down to the way things are presented by the agents to their clients and the ethical standards that agents hold themselves to and their associations and brokers and all that hold them to, because there's so much I can't even anyways, but I'll start with one part is if an agent is not showing a property based on the commission that is being paid to the broker, the buyer's agent during that is unethical.
It is.
Absolutely no way should that be steering them from showing a property or not showing a property. Mm-hmm. So one, they should be showing that no matter what they're getting paid. Two, they should be having conversations with their buyer's agents like we do with a buyer agency agreement that outlines exactly how we get paid. I think part of the problem with this whole thing is, and I know we've talked about this a million times in our office, but it's like, agents do a shit job of explaining to all the parties how they get paid, specifically buyers.
Yes.
And so if you're not explaining to your buyer, this is how commission works, this is how I get paid, while you're having them sign an agency agreement, it does appear they're getting services for free, but that's also where you outline, like, this is what we charge. Like, as an office, this is what we charge. We charge 3% from our buyers. So if it's not being paid by the seller, then you will need to pay the balance of that or whatever. It doesn't mean then we don't show a house that's listed at 2%.
Yeah.
That is super unethical. Mm-hmm. Also, I don't know how you can prove that in a court like setting of like, you know, maybe you go through all the agent's lockbox records and are like, okay, right, they only pop boxes for ones listed at 3%. Yeah. I don't know how you prove that, but that's unethical. But on the flip side of it, when you are a seller and you're paying 6%, the office is charging, like we charge as an office, 6% to the seller.
Yes.
We are choosing from that 6% how much we're paying the cooperating office. Mm-hmm. So it's not that the, I forget the verbiage you first used, but it's like, not that we're forcing them to pay that. We're charging them.
Yeah.
Like if you go into an attorney's office and the attorney says, I charge $350 an hour, you're saying, okay, great. Or I can't afford that, or I don't want to afford that, or whatever.
Yep.
But that's what it is. Or maybe you try to negotiate with them. But like we as an office charge 6%. We're choosing what we're paying the cooperating broker. The seller is not paying the cooperating broker. The seller is paying us.
Yeah.
And we are paying the cooperating broker essentially. Mm-hmm. Like that's how our agreements read.
Yeah.
And so that's a really interesting take to me of like that it's the seller's being forced to pay the buyer's agent. No, the seller is hiring us as list agents to, and this is what we charge.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And I just feel like when I read the verbiage that was used in this case, I feel like what I got from the verbiage is that they're saying there has to be transparency. Mm-hmm. You have to decide from the get-go what the commission rate's going to be and put it in writing and share in the listing service so cooperating brokers also know. Like it felt to me like transparency is what they were asking for.
From the NAR. Absolutely. I think it's kind of like it's just been kind of corrupted, like the verbiage of it. And at the end of the day, I know, like you mentioned listening to something else, but like, we don't always get paid for working with
people. No, we don't.
Right?
Yes.
And even when we take a listing, they're not paying us up front for photos or anything like that.
No.
But at the same point in time, the buyer, at the end of the day, this is how I look at commission kind of, is at the end of the day, the buyer is truly paying the commission because they're the ones paying the house price with that commission essentially on top, right? Because if everyone's paying a commission, right? And we're taking like an average amount of what the commission is paid at like 2.75% per side, which is 5.5%. If we're taking an average, then if you weren't having an agent, ideally your purchase or your sales price would be 5.5% less.
Yeah.
So the buyer is really paying 5.5% or, you know, the cost of the house plus the 5.5% or 6% or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a really unfair argument that it's just the seller paying for it, because it's really not. The buyer has to agree to pay X amount for the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think like the biggest takeaway for me is the importance, like you said, of doing buyer agency agreements with our clients and explaining how it works. And I had one client where the seller was offering zero commission to cooperating broker. But I'd already had that conversation with him. And I was nervous when I brought it to him and said, hey, I know you love this house, you know, this, let's figure out a plan. But he immediately was like, well, let's just tack it on. I'll pay for it. No problem. Like, because we'd already had a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I've had other deals where, you know, either I've been okay taking a lesser commission or my clients chipped in a little bit to get us closer to the commission that we usually get. But it's, if you're willing to be transparent and have this conversation and set the standard with your client from the beginning, it removes the space for
any issues. Well, and it's like annoying, and there's really not a lot of training on it as far as like how much we shy away from financial conversations with our clients when this is usually the biggest purchase of their life or biggest sale of their life. Like, it's wild to me how many agents are like, and I did when I first got involved, especially because I was like 21, 22. And it was like trying to talk to people in their like 40s and 50s about their finances felt very awkward.
Yeah.
But it's something you have to be able to do.
Yes.
That is like such a huge portion of what we're encompassing in a real estate transaction. And like you said, like you have to be able to have those conversations with your clients of how you're getting paid. And because a lot of times like buyers feel awkward and they're like, wait a minute, well, how do I get paid? And sometimes they don't want to ask, or sometimes they ask, which is really good if they do, if they haven't been told, but it's really important for them to also understand. And I think it's like an overall professionalism in our industry that needs to, like a shift that needs to happen.
Yeah.
I am shocked as hell that it was, the case went the way it went.
Me too.
Because you couldn't find any, like, what did we talk about? Find any of the judges' comments as far as the ruling went.
No, any of the judges' comments. I know the NAR is already working on appealing. Mm-hmm. And
it'd be interesting to watch.
I don't understand, having read through all of the court documentation, how the jury landed the way they did, because the way that I heard it and understood it, but I think the problem is, unless you are in this industry and doing it every day, you don't understand. And I read this one article by the New York Times, and I was so frustrated because it was like, finally, realtors are held accountable for how they just take advantage of people. And I'm like, you have no idea how hard we work.
What is the average real estate? Didn't you pull that up? Average real estate agent makes X amount a year. It was like
33,000. And we work so hard. And there are so many clients that we spend hours on that we never get past the finish line because whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we only get paid if a deal closes. Mm-hmm. And yes, we need to be ethical and follow the code of conduct and make sure we're staying above reproach. But at the end of the day, like, we're offering a service and deserve to be paid for said service. Yeah. Just like you said, when you hire an attorney, you don't just expect them to do it for free because you don't want to pay them.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, if you're going to go after someone for their commission, go after like the jewelers.
I know.
They make a hefty commission and they just stand in front of a shiny box.
Oh no. Someone's going to come for us.
Someone's going to come for us. They're going to be like, you don't understand my industry.
But it's fair though. Like that, yeah. There is a lot of mystery around the real estate industry. Yeah. And I know for like a long time, it was kind of like, you know, like how people like stereotype used cars.
Yes.
And it's not fair to either industry because it's really not true. But I feel like that is where real estate agents have stood for a long time. And I think that's why it's extra important for us to have the professional standards we have and to be ethical and to take the higher road all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really frustrating sometimes, but at the end of the day, it's up to us as an industry to educate the public and to maintain those levels of, you know, morality, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because.
Well, and the word that just is really sticking with me through all of this is like just transparency across the board. Being transparent, communicating with our clients, being completely upfront and honest from the get-go, like not shying away from those hard conversations.
I feel like these are conversations that ever since being in real estate, I've always been taught to have.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know that it happened another way.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Because you've been with me.
That's because you've been with Danielle.
Who... Like hearing this, I'm like, how do they even get themselves in a sticky situation like that? Like,
which is what's wild to me is that these people felt they were well represented by their agents.
Yeah.
And still went after.
And still went after that. Yeah. And also like, it's always negotiable.
Always.
Like that's the thing. And it may not, like, here's the thing, like it's negotiable, but we may say, no, sorry. Like this is what our office charges and we're not budgeting. Yeah. And then they go somewhere else and that's fine.
Uh-huh.
But it's always like, there's always that opportunity to negotiate.
Yes.
You know, and you negotiate based on, I think, what services are you going to get?
Yeah.
And what are you willing to sacrifice to save a little money?
Yep.
Like that's really at the end of the day, what it is. We're a full service brokerage. So we charge X amount. Another brokerage may charge half of that, but they may only offer half or a third of the services. Like it's and. Sellers and buyers have to make those determinations on their own. But again, if we're not upfront with it, you know, as agents, then no wonder there's like this mystery around it and people feel misled.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, I remember one of our friends asked us right after the ruling happened and he said, so what does this mean? Like, what does this mean for your industry? And I was like, I don't really think it means much of anything, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
It's a landmark ruling in the fact of like, it's a class action and it went that far. And I think it's brought up some things, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to change how we go about things much, at least for the way we operate as our office, because we are transparent.
Yeah.
And I think people still need to get paid. I don't think it's all of a sudden going to change to hourly rates or something like that. First of all, buyers and sellers often can't afford that. That's why we get paid at closing. Mm-hmm. That's why we get paid at the end of the deal. And that's why sometimes we don't get paid because we never got to the finish line.
Right.
But I cannot imagine this transitioning to a type of attorney type of way of running where it's like, okay, now it's going to be an hourly rate.
Yeah, no.
People can barely afford as it is. Like it's,
exactly.
You can't do it that way.
No. And so I think, and people have all different circumstances too of why they're selling, you know, like divorce or death or whatever. Like, can you imagine going in and being like, okay, well, on top of whatever other fees you have to maintain this house or to whatever, we're now going to be billing you hourly.
Yeah. That's
when it's due every 30 days or whatever. Like, I just don't think it's going to change like that.
I don't think so either.
I think that it's going to bring about some changes in the wording and the way agents the standard we're held to, which should change. I feel that's something we talk about a lot. It's we should have a higher level, but that's like expected. You know what I mean? Like sure, certain offices or teams operate with higher standards, but as an industry. But I don't think it's going to change much.
No.
But I am curious the appeal and where things go, because
I know it's going to be a long road. I couldn't believe that they won.
I thought it was way more insidious. Like when I heard about it, you know, when it happened, I just thought there was so much more to it. And that's why they were found guilty, you know, not because like listening to this, I'm like,
that's why when I was researching it, I was like, oh my God, like how did this happen? I don't understand. I don't understand.
But that's why we're going, you know, like how we in Spokane have our own listing agreements, buyer agreements. Now we're transitioning to statewide because I think because of that problem.
That makes sense.
So, which I don't remember that specifically. Like that verbiage is not specifically in our listing agreements. As it is, but I'm sure that's leading to it.
So Annie's about to get on it.
Yeah, she's the best.
Oh, she's the best. I'm sure we'll hear from her after.
Good case.
Oh my God. I know, it was so interesting. I spent so long reading on it and it was very fun. So thanks for listening to me.
I know. I'm happy to learn about it because I've seen lots of headlines, but I've always just been like, until it happens and it's personally like affecting what I do, I don't put that in my worry pile. So I kind of
fair. No. There's no need to worry until it's necessary. No.
So no, but that was super interesting to learn about. I would definitely want to keep up on it now.
Yeah, I'll keep you posted. We'll do an update episode once we hear about an appeal getting going. So
I know. Love that. Interesting to watch.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.